Fictional speculation about other life in our universe has only grown since H.G. Wells introduced the world to the thought of creatures from Mars landing on Earth in 1898. The genre has even become a mainstream part of our culture in recent years as Star Wars and Marvel continue to encourage viewers to wonder, what lies in space? We as a human race have been speculating for years. Are we alone in this universe? Are we on the only planet with living things? We dream of advanced planets and strange extraterrestrial visitors. I know I have. How cool would advanced life be? I'm Emma Anderson, your host for Points of Interest. There are people right now who devote their lives to searching for other life in the universe, and there are others who teach about this search and the results so far. Dr. Williams, a professor of astronomy at Texas A&M University Commerce, is one of the many people out there curious about life in the universe, and he teaches a class about life in the universe at the university.
I have always been interested in astronomy as long as I can remember. My parents have pictures of me as this toddler carrying around tubes of the cardboard tubes that are at the center of rolls of paper towel and just looking through it like a telescope. We had a small telescope when I was growing up. My mom had bought it to look at a solar eclipse through. And I would take it out sometimes. I was never an expert with it. But it was really the start of the space shuttle program that got me going on my trek to astronomy that I had never seen a rocket launch. The last Apollo rockets had launched when I was an infant, and it was first grade, April of 1981, when the first space shuttle launched. And to see this ungainly, large, massive object just suddenly blast off into the sky was very impressive. And so I started reading everything I could about rockets, which led to space, which led to astronomy. And I got hooked. And so I was lucky that not only was I interested in the topic, but I have an aptitude for it. And so I studied astronomy and physics at Penn State University. Got a bachelor's degree in both of those. And then was accepted into graduate school at the University of California in Santa Cruz. And earned my master's and doctorate in astronomy there. You know, historically, the search for life in the universe, or the study of it, has been simply wild guessing about, are there other planets? Would they be like our own? What beings would be on them? And could they look like us and talk like us? And the assumptions up through most of the 1900s was that if there were other planets, of course there would be people on them just like us, and that we would be able to communicate with them and have wars with them or things like that. It's been recently, since the 1960s, that astronomers have tried to take a scientific approach of actually searching for planets around both our own sun and around other stars where we think life could exist, and then to study how did life get going on the Earth, and assuming that that's the way life gets going anywhere in the universe, then can we find signs of life on other planets as well? And so a lot of the course and a lot of the topic is based around presenting what little we know about planets around other stars and what little we know about our own planet and where life on the Earth came from. And then trying to project that onto, you know, looking into the future, what might we find when we do become technologically capable of detecting life elsewhere. The way that the first planets around sun-like stars were found uses a method called the wobble method, which uses the Doppler shift, which is very similar to how police radar works, that the light that comes from a star changes its color very slightly due to the gravity of a planet pulling on the star. And so by watching the star, we can actually see a star move very slowly in response to the gravitational pull of a planet. So, for example, alien looking at our sun would see the sun moving at about 3 feet per second or so due to the pull of Jupiter. And the Earth, which is a much smaller planet, would only cause the sun to move by about half an inch a second or so, which is just not detectable with current technology. So if you want to try and find Earth-like planets, you need a different technique. Another technique that became popular recently is called the transit method. And it's you can think of it like an eclipse, that from our viewpoint, planets in another solar system might go in front of their parent star. And when they do so, they'll block a tiny fraction of the light that comes from the star. So a Jupiter-sized planet would block about 1% of the light of a star. An Earth-sized planet would block only about 1/100th of 1% of the light from a star, which is hard to measure, but with space telescopes, we can measure that difference. And so the famous NASA spacecraft Kepler used that technique to identify several thousand planets around other stars during its main lifetime. That mission is now coming to a close, and NASA just launched a new satellite called TESS for Transiting Exoplanet Survey something or other, spacecraft, I think, or satellite, which is looking for, which is continuing the search, looking for Earth-sized planets or larger around stars that are relatively nearby. NASA's Kepler spacecraft found planets around stars that are mostly around several hundred to a thousand light years away, which allowed it to, the mission was designed so it could survey large numbers of stars that were tended to be far away, but that way it could get numbers of very precise numbers of planets and very large numbers of planets. The TESS spacecraft is unique in that it can survey the entire sky and look for planets around most of the very bright stars in the sky that haven't been surveyed yet.
There's so much universe. There's no way there's not some other thing slightly living concept. There's infinite space. There's got to be, like, some bacteria floating around there. I think when people think about life in the universe, they think of actual humanoid things, but they don't think about little microbes.
That's right. Most people, when they think about life in the universe, do think of aliens and Star Trek and Star Wars, and I understand why. That's much more interesting to our imaginations than imagining little bacteria swimming around in some sort of primordial soup on another world. But the basic idea is that life has existed on Earth for at least 3.5 billion years, and probably close to the entire 4.5 billion years of the Earth's lifetime. And for all of that time, up until about 500 million years ago, there was not any complex life. It was single-cell organisms. And so 500 million years compared to 4.5 billion means that for 90% of the time there's been life on the Earth, it was single-cell organisms. And we expect that's probably the case for life elsewhere, just because it's easier for a single-cell organism to arise than a multicellular organism. And then to go from multicellular organisms, such as simple plants and jellyfish, up to human beings, is a much more complex process. And that evolution, we don't know how often that might happen in the universe. So most astronomers assume that when we find the first signs of life on another planet, it will probably be a microbial type life form. And although it seems amazing that we could detect microbes on another planet, these microbes that lived on the Earth for 3.5 billion years completely reshaped the planet. They changed the atmosphere, they changed the chemistry of the water, they changed the chemistry of the rocks. And that's what astronomers would be looking for, these changes in the chemistry. That's what's detectable from hundreds of light years away.
Occasionally when I'm outside, I look up at the sky and wonder, is anybody out there? And I often end up stopping to think, space continues on infinitely. There has to be something out there. I feel so small thinking about how this planet could be the only place with life hurtling through space, and I'm spending time worrying about what I'm going to post on social media. We don't often stop ourselves to think about how unique life is. I also find it amusing we never consider the fact that if there is other life out there, it could just be some tiny one-celled organisms. We often imagine aliens as advanced creatures. If all the extraterrestrials in our movies became microscopic germs, how would that change things? Although microscopic life is most likely what we will cross paths with in the universe, there is still an active search for advanced life going on.
Yes, so SETI is the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence. It is a privately funded venture. Since the 1980s, it has been illegal for the U.S. government to give funding to look for intelligent life. So this is totally privately funded. And there are several aspects to SETI. The primary aspect, what most people are aware of, if they're aware of anything, is the search for radio waves from extraterrestrial intelligence. Radio waves were among the first ways that humans learned to communicate electronically and digitally, and we still use radio waves to talk to our satellites and to talk to space probes, because radio is relatively cheap to create. It's easy to detect over large distances, and the universe is pretty quiet in radio waves. So any very deliberately created signal will stand out compared to just sort of a background hiss and static created by nature itself. And so most of SETI has used radio telescopes, and they are searching the sky for carrier waves, for the strong radio signal that then carries the encoded information on it. And carrier waves tend to be very narrow in frequency, but we have no clue which of the many hundreds of trillions of radio channels an alien may choose to send on. And so SETI involves a lot of computer power searching radio signals for over many millions upon billions of channels, and looking for that one little bit of noise that looks unnatural. And the SETI people have follow-up that they can provide, the SETI people have follow-up measures in place if they detect an interesting signal. And one example of that was I heard about when I was a graduate student at UC Santa Cruz. One of our professors was Frank Drake, who created the Drake equation, which is the likelihood that we will find intelligent life elsewhere. And they had detected a signal that had a lot of characteristics that they expected for an extraterrestrial signal. And they were getting very excited about it. They were going down their checklist one by one. It was a narrow signal. It was coming from a certain spot in the sky and always in the same spot in the sky. It showed Doppler shifts, which is what you would expect for something that's orbiting a star. And it matched all these other criteria. And then finally, they decided, before they popped the corks on the champagne, to do one last check through all of the known satellites and all the radio waves that they go on to. This is part of their computer program that automatically removes known satellites from signals. But when they checked it, they found there was one satellite, a solar observatory, that transmitted at that exact frequency and would have been at that exact location in the sky. And what had happened was, when they'd updated their satellite database, someone had accidentally erased that one line from their search parameters. And so they just missed that satellite. And on the good side, it shows that their search works and they can detect artificial signals on the bad side, it shows that it's easy for a small human error to cause potentially a large error in judgment. But all of their, that's the reason they have all of these backup checks in place to make sure that they don't record a signal like that. There are also some people in SETI who are looking for what they call optical SETI, which is basically laser beam pulses to send light across and information across the universe using giant pulsed laser beams. It would work very similar to the way that optical fibers work, where pulsed laser light can travel through a fiber, except in this case you're sending it through space. The advantage of optical light is that you can send a lot more information a lot more quickly. The disadvantage is that the dust in space tends to absorb optical light, and so you're limited to how far you can transmit. But these astronomers who are looking are hoping that these aliens would know how to find where the Earth is and send us a signal that we could detect that would be very different from any other type of known star that we look at. And there have been several searches that I'm aware of, and none of them have found anything yet. The WOW signal, I forget the exact date, but it was detected in, I believe, the early 70s at Ohio State. It was using a radio telescope called the Big Ear Telescope. And this telescope just looks at a certain part of the sky and allows the sky to bring radio sources into its field of view. So as the Earth rotates, different parts of the sky are visible. And so rather than having to steer a giant telescope, which it can make it difficult to point and know exactly where you're pointing, you just let the Earth bring things by. And they were using this Big Ear telescope to look for signals, and most of what they were finding was just the normal static of background radio sources and the occasional known radio source. And one day there was an extraordinarily strong signal that came through, much stronger than any other signal they had detected. And when they measured the strength of the signal, it looked like it was coming from a specific part of the sky where there weren't satellites and wouldn't have been an airplane. But it was a one-time occurrence. The next day when that part of the sky came by, there was nothing there. And they searched, many people have searched that same region of the sky many times since and have never seen that signal recur. So there have been several ideas put forward. One is that it was some sort of reflection of a Earth-based radar signal or radio signal, that it either bounced off a point in the sky or bounced off maybe an asteroid, or that there was an airplane that just happened to be coming straight at the telescope for long enough for this to see it. The signal doesn't seem to really match that. It really does look like it's coming from a source out in space. Another possibility is that it is a real signal, and potentially even an extraterrestrial signal, that deep space radio waves can bounce around, sort of like they do on Earth's atmosphere. And and while most of the time these signals will get scattered away from the Earth, sometimes a signal that would miss the Earth might get scattered toward it. And so this could have been just a temporary scattering of a directed signal toward the Earth, that most of the time the signal comes nowhere near here. That's a distinct possibility, but if that were the case, you would expect to see catch little bits of the snippets of the signal now and then when the conditions were right, and we haven't seen it again. The most recent idea I heard, and I wish I could properly attribute it, I don't remember where I saw it, but it was a reputable source pointing out that there was a comet that had gone across the sky on that very day and would have been at or near that point in the sky where the radio telescope was pointing. And comets don't normally emit radio waves, but some of them do have radio emission because of interactions between their atoms and the solar wind. And if it's true that that comet was there on that day, it wouldn't have been there the next day. And to me, that's just sort of the explanation that makes sense. There are a lot of commentary astronomers saying, no, I don't see how a comet could do that. But you needed an astronomical source that was there one day and not the next, and there was this comet. So I wouldn't bet very much money, but I'd be willing to bet 50 cents or so on that explanation. Human technology has advanced to a point where astronomers can make serious searches for life on other planets. In the coming few decades, over times when the students here will be alive and paying taxes that fund these things and also being there to consume the news when it's produced. And being able to identify a good science story and be able to tell, oh yes, what these astronomers are talking about makes sense, that we heard that this might happen. I think that's a very good reason to teach the subject. And also, people are interested. I think it's the most common question I get asked when I tell people on an airplane or elsewhere that I'm an astronomer is, are there aliens? Or they'll tell me about the UFO that they saw. And so teaching a class about it is a way to approach a subject that a lot of people truly are interested in, even if they don't want to admit it, and to give them some real information and provide a little science background that hopefully will stick with them through their lives. Since most of these students will never take another science class, and that's okay, you know, you're in college, it's your final set of courses you'll ever take, but it's the last chance to leave a good taste in their mouth, so that a student can go out and be a savvy consumer of science that they hear about and question when they see the History Channel talking about aliens that helped to build the pyramids or something like that, and really say, oh yeah, that's total bunk. Because aliens are a big part of our culture, from science fiction through conspiracy theories, through just joking around about little green men and alien abductions and that sort of thing. It's deeply ingrained in our cultures and deeply ingrained in our culture. So we might as well explain what we actually do know, which is not that much.
So when people ask you, are there aliens, what do you say?
I hem and haw. There's a quote by Arthur C. Clarke that goes approximately like, some days I believe there's life in the universe, some days I don't. Either way, it's a staggering thought. Which, when I stop and think about it, it is. Just the idea that there might be some little paramecium swimming around in a primordial soup on some other planet, or Chewbacca out there flying spaceships. Those are amazing thoughts, but then to look out and see this huge universe and to think we might be the only intelligence out there looking at the universe, that's also staggering and sad. My gut feeling, and that's all it is that it seems that life got started on the Earth very early, when the Earth was a pretty hostile place. And so I can imagine that it might be fairly easy for life to get started on many other planets. Whether it can survive for 4.5 billion years, whether it can evolve intelligence, I honestly don't know. We have one example, and that's ourselves. I would like to think that someday we can meet a benevolent, intelligent alien somewhere, but what I want to believe and what is actually real could be two very different things.
Have you seen, like, the Adventures of the Marvels movies, where they're like, well, we have the technology now, which means more people are going to come fight us. Can you see that as, like, we have more technology to broadcast, so there's more chance of somebody coming back and being like, we see you?
I would say yes, that's distinctly possible, that humans have now been broadcasting detectable radio waves into space since the 1930s. And every year, those signals go out another light year in distance, which means that every year there's a larger volume of the universe that could pick up our signals and know that there's a technological civilization here. I would also assume that any alien intelligence that might be out there looking for us or listening for us would already know that there are Earth-like planets around our sun. Although it's hard to detect small planets like the Earth, if you are able to cross vast quantities of space to visit or to send signals, and you know how to pick up signals from hundreds of light years away, then I would assume that you could also detect the small signals that our planet makes as it orbits the sun. And it would be disappointing if we surprised any aliens that they said, like, oh my gosh, this neighboring star has a technological civilization, we better go blow them up before they have a chance to do anything to us. But yes, I mean, it's the longer that we continue to make radio noise and put out our signals into space, the more likely it is that if there is intelligent life in the universe, that they would be able to detect us.
Now, of course, I couldn't resist asking someone who had devoted their entire life to looking at the stars if they had seen anything that they consider strange. I appreciate Dr. Williams' rational approach to his extraterrestrial experiences.
There are many times when I'm out at the telescope and I will pick up, I don't want to call them weird signals, I will pick up things I haven't seen before. Like, for example, right now I'm thinking of a star that I was measuring the brightness of over time. And we were expecting this star to get brighter and fainter over several minutes, and it was. But then it had a sudden, just a few second long, very sharp drop in how bright it was. And then it came back to normal. And that's odd to have something like that happen and not repeating. And planets orbiting around the star, which could cause a signal like that, take several minutes to hours to cross the face of the star. And this was about a minute long. So it didn't match that idea either. In retrospect, it took a few months before I discovered that there happened to be one bad spot in that camera and the star drifted over it during that short amount of time. So things like that happen all the time, where we see signals that are clearly not natural, but in the end, they're all human-made, not anything else. I've seen lots of weird things in the sky, weird clouds, satellites that flash weird patterns because they're tumbling. And I've even noticed that if I'm watching a bright satellite like the space station or another one go overhead, and I'm chewing gum at the time, it looks like the satellite is changing direction, and it looks like it's bouncing around the sky, like some people have said with UFOs. And so I can fully understand where that comes from. But in terms of, you know, have I ever seen anything that I think might be signs of extraterrestrial life? No, everything I've seen, I can come up with a explanation for that doesn't involve aliens. There are certainly weird things that happen on the Earth where they're not yet explicable. But I think if you want to invoke extraterrestrial intelligence as being the cause of that, people are making a very large jump in logic, which is not justified. And so I'm trying to now, a lot of the supposedly mysterious things that happen on the Earth are fully explicable. I've had people talk about UFOs that they've seen. In fact, when I was a graduate student at Santa Cruz, the local news channel called because they had video of what they said was a UFO setting into the Pacific Ocean, and they wanted me to look at it. And I said, I'd be willing to look at it, but I asked them some few basic questions first. What time was it? Well, they had time stamps on their video, so they could tell me the exact time. Where did they take the video? They knew that too. And what direction were you pointing the camera? They had that, and it was pretty obvious because there were landmarks that you could use to also verify that. And I went to some cheap planetarium software online, put in the time, the place, the direction, and it showed the star Sirius was setting in exactly that place at exactly that time. Now, the news people didn't want to believe that they'd seen a star. It was flashing all kinds of colors and seemed to be jumping all over the place. And our atmosphere does that to things that are extremely low in the sky. But that's what it was. And it was obvious to see that. And thankfully, they were receptive to the idea that, you know, I can't. That although I wasn't there, I could look and I could say, oh yes, you did see something, this is what you saw. And
you saw something very serious.
Yes. Seriously, it was a star. And there, you know, that happens quite a bit. Some of the news links that I see people post on places like Facebook that come from perhaps less than reputable news sites, but that talk about airplane pilots or military plane pilots saw this thing that they can't explain, so it must be an alien. If you can't explain it, then yes, it's a UFO, unidentified flying object. That doesn't mean that it's an alien driving a spaceship with some weird kind of drive. And also the people who, I believe pilots, but the pilots are trained when they're flying their planes to be on the lookout for other flying objects, usually airplanes, that could potentially be a danger. So if you see something that's slightly out of the ordinary, your brain is trained to instantly go to, is this thing hazardous? What does it mean? There's some weird reflection on my radar, and then there's this strange light I see out the window that could be dangerous to the life of every passenger on board this plane. And that's the filter that they interpret it through. And that's the filter that I want them interpreting it to. But it doesn't mean it's an alien. It could be some weird reflection and a star or a planet or a bird flying around. And a lot of times there's just not enough information to follow up with what people are really seeing. But I know of nothing and no unexplained phenomenon where I would feel comfortable saying, yeah, it's probably aliens. the main research I do is on the remains of stars like the sun that have ended their lives. We call them white dwarfs, but you can think of them as glowing ash heaps, leftover nuclear fuel that's slowly cooling off and fading away. And we can use that to study what happens inside of stars during their lifetimes. And is very much like stellar forensics. So my wife and daughter love watching the Investigation Discovery Channel and all the other crime show channels. And you know, it's always the CSI people who are the heroes solving these cases, and that's what I kind of feel like as I'm working on stuff. Now, no one, it's not going to change anyone's lives or affect any court cases if I crack one of the secrets of the stellar death cycle, but it's amazing that the analogies work really well. know, I measure how hot these stars are. They're cooling off over time. That tells me how long ago the star was still alive. It's a lot like taking a liver temperature. And so a lot of what the scientists do, a lot of what we do, is understandable when put into, you know, a good analogy. Finding that analogy can be hard. But, I mean, there's some freakish things out there that maybe people haven't heard of. I was just reminded today of a colleague of mine who, she studies red supergiant stars, which are massive stars near the end of their lives. But there's one weird type of star that is hypothesized to exist that would be one of these red giant stars, which would be something that in our own solar system, if you put it where the sun was, it would swallow Mercury and Venus and the Earth and Mars and Jupiter. So a tremendously huge star that would be completely powered by a 15-mile ball of neutrons at its center. And we don't know of stars, most stars shouldn't do that, but it's possible this can exist. And oftentimes when you predict something that can exist, nature obliges and gives you examples of that. And just the idea that a 15-mile diameter sphere of neutrons, which would be a huge atomic nucleus, could power an entire star that has a size as big as the orbit of Jupiter is rather astounding.
It's huge.
Yeah, and it, you know, we are dealing with that, with those sorts of things. Or another one of my colleagues, Anna Frabel, works on trying to get ages of the oldest stars to try and see what's the oldest star she can find. And one way that she does it is she looks for uranium in these old stars. Uranium is not created by stars while they're alive. It's created during the explosions of stars called supernovae. And then the remnants of that supernova get recycled into a new generation of stars, and so the star that's born then has uranium in it. And you can get an age of the star by seeing how much of that uranium has decayed away over the lifetime of the star. And just the fact that, you know, knowing what we humans tend to want to do with uranium to make bombs or to make nuclear power plants, but that we can use that same substance that has such a negative connotation on the Earth in the universe to figure out the ages of stars, it's tremendously cool.
There's no telling when or if we will find other life in our universe. I would love there to be a discovery in my lifetime, but then again, we have to consider what ethical issues will arise. We are still working on not discriminating against our own species. Another advanced creature would raise even more questions and problems. Until then, I'm sure the science fiction that we regularly generate will continue to expand our curiosity about life in the universe. And I'm only going to continue to wonder if the Earth is the only rock with life on it in an infinitely expanding universe. Or perhaps there's an alien somewhere out there looking up and thinking the same thing. Who knows? This has been Points of Interest with Emma Anderson.
Points of Interest is produced by KETR-FM in Commerce, Texas. The executive producer is Jared Knight. Support for this podcast comes from its listeners. Show your support by donating at KETR.org today.